In a speech on Monday, U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai outlined the Biden administration's approach to the U.S.-China trade relationship. The speech came after a review of trade policies from the Trump era. Tai said American workers would be a key focus of Biden's vision.
When it comes to our relationship with China, what's best for American workers is growing the American economy to create more opportunity and more jobs with better wages here in the United States.
Some critics, though, say the speech lacked a clear strategy for taking on a country that doesn't play by the same economic rules always as the U.S. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see tariffs on some Chinese products end or continue? Do you think the Biden administration should have a tough approach with China when it comes to trade, or do you want to see less confrontation, more negotiation? What questions do you have about this complicated relationship? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Mary Gallagher is a professor of political science and director of the International Institute at the University of Michigan. Mary, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
What kind of concrete trade policy takeaways did you see from this speech on Monday?
Well, I thought the speech was pretty interesting, and I didn't really agree with the critics that it didn't do enough, or it was not super concrete about the Biden administration's strategy in the longer term. But she did make some pretty important statements about at least the kind of direction of the Biden administration, kind of much more strategic. I would call it sort of her speech was like giving up on China. You know, they don't expect China to change, and they don't think the previous attempts, either by the Trump administration or earlier administrations, that those attempts to sort of change China through engagement, that those haven't worked. So I thought it was a pretty interesting speech in that regard, pretty pessimistic, and, you know, just trying to develop a much more strategic approach to trading with China.
What kind of continuities have there been from the Trump to Biden administrations, especially when it comes to things like tariffs on products from China?
Well, most importantly is, of course, that the tariffs have continued. And in her speech on Monday, Ambassador Tai referred to the phase one agreement, that they're going to look for enforcement of that agreement if they want to see that China meets the goals that it promised the Trump administration in January 2020. So that was a pretty important continuity. I don't think that the Biden administration thinks that the Trump administration's implementation of their strategy was very effective, you know, kind of alienating allies and not doing much except these unilateral tariffs. But they're going to use them as something that they have in their toolbox. So there was some pretty important continuity. She also announced the continuation or the restart of a targeted tariff exclusion program so that American firms that are being hurt by the tariffs, that they can now apply for the tariffs to be relaxed or for certain products that they need for production.
Right. The idea there being if I have a company and I can only get my raw material from China, I might be able to get that tariff exemption. Do I have that right?
Exactly.
Now, looking at the big picture here, it seems like a general consensus that China doesn't play by the rules when it comes to international trade. What are some of the specific things that you see China doing that aggravate these relationships?
There's a lot of different aspects of the Chinese economy that really don't fit well into the global economy as it was sort of constructed by the United States and other Western market economies. And some of these characteristics of the Chinese economy have been sort of doubled down upon in China's current administration, Xi Jinping. So much more focus on the state sector, the state-owned enterprises, which continue to make up a pretty big chunk of the Chinese economy. Other types of policies like the use of subsidies to target industries that China really wants to expand. Ambassador Tai mentioned several of those industries in her speech, including solar panels, steel going back all the way to the 1990s, and then most recently semiconductors. And then there are other things that have long been problems in the U.S.-China relationship, including intellectual property theft, as well as the use of dumping. So goods that are produced very cheaply being dumped into the U.S. market. And the dumping is important not because, you know, China has cheaper production costs, but part of the reason why China has cheaper production costs is their workers have very low wages and environmental protection is very weak.
Talking to Mary Gallagher from the University of Michigan, political scientist there, looking at U.S.-China trade relations, a speech from a key trade official in the U.S. this week, setting a new course. You could join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Mark is with us in Altoona. Mark, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having the program. I was just wondering if your guest could comment a bit on the positive effects of some of the tariffs, such as how we are getting undercut by state-sponsored aluminum, and the aluminum production in the United States is becoming at risk for not being able to exist, which, you know, we don't want to be too dependent on a foreign power that you may end up in a conflict with or whatever. So I was just curious about, and I don't agree with all the tariffs, but there seemed like there were some tariffs that were just really needed to protect manufacturing and, you know, ability to defend ourselves.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Mary, Mark brings up a really key point there. The Trump administration had invoked strategic needs, like Mark was talking about, for tariffs, not just on China, but allies like Canada and the European Union as well. How big a part of the story is that, where we want to make sure we can keep producing aluminum if, say, we have a very unfriendly relationship with China in the future?
I mean, I don't disagree, and I think that in some cases tariffs can be effective. I think for the longer term, I don't think tariffs are a great tool, mainly because they increase the cost of production, they increase the cost of consumers. But in terms of things like aluminum, I think one thing that the Biden administration might want to focus on, and it seems like this is something that she mentioned in the talk, is that it's much easier for the United States to find kind of common ground with other market economies like the European Union or with Canada. And if they can find a joint policy around aluminum production, and then they can work together targeting China, because China isn't playing by the rules, that's a much more effective long-term policy. But in the short term, I think that probably in some areas the tariffs have been successful. Of course, as we all like to point out, is that the tariffs do tend to increase prices on U.S. consumers no matter what. But she made some important remarks, I think, in the question and answer section of her speech about, you know, working with the European Union on this. And of course, I think she also said in the speech that she was flying to Paris right after to go to an OECD meeting. So it does seem like there is more conversation with important allies.
Mark, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. I want to listen more now to U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai in that speech on Monday.
Even when China changed the specific practices we challenged, it did not change the underlying policies, and meaningful reforms by China remained elusive. In recent years, China's leaders have doubled down on their state-centric economic model.
And there, Mary, is that state industry model that you were talking about earlier. I mean, does the United States, does anybody outside of China really have that much leverage on China to get them to move away from that core model?
You know, I don't think we have that much influence over the domestic politics right now that are going on in China. I think that we have an interest in how those things are resolved. And certainly the parts of Chinese society and the economy that traditionally would be more kind of pro-globalization, pro, you know, better relations with the United States, those people are not in the they're not very vocal right now, let's say, in China. This kind of state capitalist model is definitely dominant. Xi Jinping, the leader of China and the head of the Communist Party, is certainly doubling down on it, as she said in the speech. I do think that long term, that system will not be successful. But we have to show that the other system, the market system, is successful. And that, I think that's the challenge that the Biden administration faces. And I think part of the reason why Katherine Tai's speech was a little bit maybe not concrete is that a large part of the Biden agenda is about our domestic agenda. So we can't really formulate a very strategic and concrete trade policy with China until the infrastructure plan and these other bills are passed, and or if they're passed.
We're talking to Mary Gallagher, professor of political science, director of the International Institute at the University of Michigan. She's with us today to talk about the U.S.-China trade relationship. The Biden administration laid out some of its approach earlier this week. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions. Has your business been affected by tariffs against products coming from China? Do you think those tariffs should stay or go? Do you have questions for our guest about how the Chinese economy works, how it's different from the U.S., why that creates clashes in the world of trade? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk about the Biden administration's strategy on trade with China. Mary Gallagher stays with us from the University of Michigan. You can join in with your thoughts, questions about tariffs on products from China, what you want to see from the trade relationship. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Heather is with us in Madison. Heather, hello.
Hi, guys. My question concerns the climate change factor and how we're going to play that out in the relationship. When you look at the cost of producing something in China, it's not just the input cost of the raw materials or what they're paying their workers. It's about transporting the materials to and from and, you know, the carbon cost and all that kind of thing. So, you know, how that's going to play into the relationship, I think, is something that hopefully they're thinking about and the strategy of that.
Interesting question. Thanks for the call, Heather. Mary, climate change and how the U.S. and China deal with it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people believe that climate change is actually one of the bright spots or potential bright spots in the relationship because it's really an area of common interest. We can't solve climate change without both countries being invested. But I think there are a lot of challenges, and some of it is just the short-term thinking of companies. I mean, if companies are thinking just about the bottom line or the cost of, you know, the widget that they produce being cheap as possible, then we can't change their behavior. And, you know, consumers obviously play a role in that because we need to ask questions as consumers about where the products come from and what their carbon footprint is. I think there's some push for having more information, you know, when we buy something about not just the price or maybe where it's made. And then you can think about, is this made with, you know, labor that's been forced or something like that? But also, you know, what is the carbon footprint. I think COVID-19 and also the increasing concern about climate change is starting to change how corporations think about supply chains, right? That we might need supply chains that are not just super cheap or super efficient, but also are just more reliable. And I think we'll see over the course of the next few years how supply chains might really change. And that may mean that some, you know, production does revert back to the United States, but it's unclear to me whether that's going to be a huge increase in U.S. jobs because, of course, another thing that's happening at the same time as all this trade is automation and technological change.
Thanks a lot for that call, Heather, at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Jim in Cedarburg. Jim, hi.
Hey, thanks, guys. I'm wondering if the guest shares my concern about China's saber-rattling about Taiwan. Taiwan produces the most chips. Should it form a naval blockade around Taiwan? Chips couldn't get out. What would that do to worldwide economy? I wonder what the guest thinks.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Talk about computer chips there. Worried about China disrupting that flow. And as we've already learned, disrupt the flow of computer chips in Taiwan. It has a lot of spillover effects. Your thoughts on that, Mary?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I do share Jim's concerns about what's happening in Taiwan and around Taiwan. There were a lot of excursions into Taiwan's airspace over the national holiday, which is just ending in China. With semiconductors, you know, Taiwanese firms, and you know, Taiwan is a entity that used to be part of Imperial China. It's kind of complicated, but after World War II and the Chinese Civil War, Taiwan is sort of de facto independent from the mainland and is a democracy and is an important economy in its own right. And Taiwanese firms produce the most sophisticated semiconductors in the world, along with some U.S. firms, South Korean and so forth. I think that the broader concern about Taiwan is not about access to the chips, because the chips can be made elsewhere. The major Taiwanese firm that that is in this business is just is opening a plant in Arizona. So there's a move to move some of this production to the United States. There already is some. But the bigger concern, of course, is that we go to war with China over the sovereignty of Taiwan, because China has said that this is a part of China, a province of China that should be unified with the mainland. And increasingly, I think they show some impatience over the fact that Taiwan has remained separate from the mainland for, you know, for many, many decades.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Mary Gallagher, political scientist at the University of Michigan, looking at U.S.-Chinese trade relations after a big speech from a key trade official earlier this week. Still time for your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Mary, there have been calls for, you know, some kind of like united approach of the United States and other Pacific trading partners to build an agreement to kind of rival China in the region. Sounds like the Trans-Pacific Partnership we had in the works. It was political poison for people running for president. What are your thoughts on the collapse of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and what it means now for trade with China?
That's a great question. And so the TPP has gone on after the United States dropped out. It was something that Donald Trump did in his, I think, first day in office. But, you know, importantly, in the 2016 election, neither the two major parties, neither one of them supported the TPP, even though Hillary Clinton had negotiated it as Secretary of State. And then, of course, in the 2020 election, too, hardly any, I think really none of the major contenders for the Democratic presidency, for, you know, who ran against Biden, supported it either. So this is a big problem, because the fear that I have is that the Pacific economy is going to grow more closely integrated and the U.S. will be left out. Now, China just recently in the last couple of weeks announced that it's applying to join the new version of the TPP. I think that will sort of ruin it, but because China can't really accede to all of the different conditions that it has, particularly in labor and the environment. But I think the United States, we need to think hard about trade, because if we turn away from trade, that may sound good right now because we feel like trade has only hurt us, but it's not really the case that it's only hurt us. It actually has helped a lot of regions in the United States. It's helped a lot of workers. But we did not do enough in the last couple of decades to really respond to the regions, like the regions in Michigan, like the regions in Wisconsin, that were really fundamentally injured by trade. So I think the United States needs to do some hard thinking about how can we make trade work for Americans.
And Mary, back in the late 1980s, I was at your university in Ann Arbor taking classes in your department, and there was a notion that if we engage China fully in trade, that's going to help build a middle class, they're going to develop expectations of prosperity and being represented in government, it will sort of naturally help erode authoritarianism in that country. And it seems like from this speech, as you referred to earlier, we're giving up on that notion. Is that right?
That is right. Yeah, I think that's a good summary of the turnaround. And it's amazing that, you know, the first policymakers to sort of announce the failure of engagement wasn't Donald Trump. It was people in the Obama administration. And so, you know, it's interesting, given how polarized we perceive our domestic politics, the continuity between Obama to Trump to Biden is pretty clear, at least with U.S.-China relations. And so one of the struggles that I think the Biden administration is going through right now is we see that engagement has, as she said, created no meaningful reform in China, particularly right now. What do we do to deal with that? We can't ignore China. I mean, the idea that we can just decouple and pretend like China doesn't exist, that is impossible. But I think there is very clear bipartisan recognition that engagement hasn't worked.
In our last minute or so, Mary, what are you watching for next in this relationship?
Well, you know, one of the reasons why the general atmosphere in Beijing after Ambassador Tai's talk was I think relatively optimistic, and of course that feeds into critics of Biden, the Biden administration, that he, you know, is going to sell out to China, which I don't think is the case at all. But I do think that she was being strategically kind of maybe nice, or at least not mean, because there will have to be some negotiations about the trade war, and just more recently announcing that Xi Jinping and President Biden will meet in a virtual summit. So I do expect that there's going to be at least some more negotiations and more discussions, which I think are really important. I mean, these are the two major economies in the world. They can't not speak to each other.
Mary, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun.
That's Mary Gallagher, professor of political science, director of the International Institute at the University of Michigan. She was with us today for a look at the Biden administration approach to trade with China.